Morning, everyone. Please pray with me, O Heavenly Father. Divine Mother. Beloved Jesus Christ. Blessed Master. Saints and sages of all religions. I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Amen. Reading from the vision by Swami Ram Dass. Transmit the message of peace. The potency of united thoughts of millions is simply miraculous. The mind, illumined with the ideal of the highest spirit, can work wonders. Even the thought, good or evil, of a single person has a far-reaching effect. How much more powerful and irresistible must be the combined thought of all those in the world who take a resolute stand against all that makes for discord and disruption in it. The first step in this direction is to awaken the mind of humanity. All people of different viewpoints have to be brought round to think that war is inimical to the evolution of man, to the acquisition of real and enduring peace and happiness, both for the individual and for the masses. War in any part of the world reacts on all countries alike, bringing untold misery to every member of the human race. Just as in the case of the human body, where the whole body suffers if any part of it is affected by pain and disease. The local disease or pain spreads all over the system, producing all-around misery. This is what has to be impressed on the minds of all, before they can be made to take an abiding interest in this vital problem of the day. The friends of the cause in this kind of preparatory work has got to be done by the friends of the cause in different parts of the world. We know what a thought of peace and goodwill has got immense power to conquer and transmute a thought of the opposite kind. Since the thought of peace and goodwill is born of the universal spirit, on whom the external life of humanity is based, when hundreds and millions unite together in this one thought, there will be released an invincible power which would not only neutralize the war mentality that seeks to rule the world, but also create a widespread and all-embracing consciousness of peace. So what we need is to transmit the message of peace from the heart to heart and produce against war and chaos a consensus of thought backed up by the power of spirit. Yesterday we had our day of silence and meditation. And as usual, we dedicate that day toward having world peace. We had a reading from Papa to start that day. And to feel the peace deep in your heart. You see, in order to really transmit that message of peace, you must first be that peaceful spirit within you. That means going beyond the realm of ideas, because there duality exists. When you really enter into the realm of peace, you enter into the realm of stillness. In the realm of stillness, or that static spirit, you feel that the boundaries between yourself and all the rest of creation gradually dissolve itself, and you feel yourself united in spirit with all mankind, with all creation, and even beyond all creation. It is there that you manifest the true spirit of peace. It is there that you unite yourself with the soul and spirit of all mankind. In the realm of actions, in the realm of ideas, we can feel ourselves separated from every other individual. Each person has their own unique way of viewing this world. But when we dive deep into the universal spirit, we find that that experience is the same all around the world. Read about the lives and the experiences of saints from every religion, from every country, from every part of the world, and you will read of the identical experience of being lifted up past human delusion, past human differences, past cultural differences, and you will see there a uniting spirit. This spirit that Master and Papa have combined to help bring to the West is universal. It is scientific in the sense that when one individual practices these spiritual practices as we are taught, it doesn't make any difference where they are from, what part of the social strata they may be from, what language they may speak, what clothes they may wear, what name they may adopt. None of it. None of it matters. Because it ties us into the one inimical spirit that is part and parcel of everything that is. This is what makes it universal, you see. Religions, oftentimes, end up to be divisions between humanity. But really, they should be uniters, not dividers. Really, religion should rise up beyond all the differences that mankind has. And when religion sets itself out as that religion alone is true and all others are false, that itself is a falsehood, because it's not recognizing the universal nature of this spirit which it worships. Now, it may be in humankind that there will always be various paths. People have preferences, and they can make a choice as to what path will be their highest and their best. For one, it may be a religion of devotion. It may be a devotion to a particular aspect of God, to Christ, to Krishna, to Buddha, to Lao Tzu, whatever the nature may be. Your mind is just drawn to that way. And that is all right, as long as that individual aspect of God is seen as having a transcendent nature. You should never stop with the individual ishta, or the aspect of God that you are worshiping, but rather you should see that through that form is the formless, is the uniter of all mankind. We were singing the song to the Om Gurus and naming different gurus along the path. And what we see is that when we really delve into the spirit of those that we sang, we see there a universal spirit behind the personality. The personalities are lovely. They're engaging. They're interesting. But they're just a personality, as long as it doesn't lead into the universal spirit. Once you have penetrated the personality and have gone into the universality of that one, you have seen into the true nature of that one. And then gradually, as the mind is more and more purified, you see that behind every personality that you meet, everyone you meet then becomes a doorway to the infinite. And as Master says in his wonderful poetry, then every flower is a portal to the divine spirit. Every aspect of creation, every tree, every sunset, every mountaintop, everything that we see, we penetrate through the image and see its universal divine nature. This is the real secret to the universal life. and it is ours to have. Reading from Master on his discourse on the Bible, entitled, If You Have Faith, Nothing Shall Be Impossible Unto You. And quoting from the Bible, Matthew 17:14-17, And when they were come to the multitude, there came to him a certain man kneeling down to him and saying, Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is a lunatic and sore vexed, for oftentimes he falleth into the fire and off into the water, and I brought him to thy disciples, and they could not cure him. Then Jesus answered and said, O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him hither to me. The parallel reference. And when he came to his disciples, he saw a great multitude about them, and the scribes questioning with them. And straightway all the people, when they beheld him, were greatly amazed, and running to him, saluted him. He asked the scribes, What question ye with them? And one of the multitude answered and said, Master, I have brought unto thee my son, which hath a dumb spirit. And wheresoever he taketh him, he teareth him, and he foameth, and he gnashed his teeth, and pineth away. And I spake to thy disciples, that they should cast him out, and they could not. He answereth him, and saith, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him unto me. Master's commentary. O ye generation of people, filled with ignorance and without self-realization of spirit, I have been so long with you, notwithstanding your lack of appreciation. How long shall I bear with your agonies, as also taking unto myself your evil karma? Nevertheless, bring your son to me. In the above, Jesus expressed the sorrow of endurance that attended the constant overburdening of himself with the evil karma of others. As a rich man may save a debtor from imprisonment by assuming the debt himself, so great souls, by their willpower, can work out the karmic suffering of others by taking it unto their own souls. But this fortuitous blessing by the intervening presence of a master happens only to the repentant persons who otherwise good karma attracts this mitigation of their karmic obligations. Further, Jesus knew that by the accumulating the evil karma or sinful actions of others, he would ultimately be at the high cost of his own life. He offered up man's dearest possession, his body, for the working out of karma of others by the terrible ordeal of his crucifixion, and then by the superior soul force he resurrected his body and proved his victory over the constraints of nature. Even though Jesus realized that to cure the serious, deep-seated condition of the man's possessed son meant that he himself would have to carry much evil karma of the boy, still, out of his infinite compassion, Jesus agreed to heal him. And Jesus rebuked the devil, and he started out of him, and the child was cured that very hour. Jesus remonstrated, O wicked disembodied spirit, condemned to be deaf and dumb in the astral worlds because of your evil karma, why are you conjuring more evil karma for yourself by vilely possessing this child before me, instead of rightly working out the effects of your past evil actions? I command you to come out of this boy's body and to possess him no more. Now, it's very interesting that Jesus talks and refers here to an individual, apparently mentally ill by our own standards, as being possessed by an evil spirit. And in truth, I have seen this where there are astral entities that will attach themselves to an individual. Now, sometimes the individual is open to this because they have a past history, oftentimes working in the realm of black magic and astral forces and powers. And they get caught up with that, and they get so they become open to the influence of these astral forces. Sometimes it is because the person has become alcoholic or a drug user, and therefore their ego becomes weakened. In addition to that, there are souls living in this world who are addicts. And when they leave this body, they are not prone to go into the light. They avoid the light. So they wander this earthly realm looking for weak-minded souls like themselves that they can attach themselves to and to get and imbibe the alcohol or the drugs that they've been used to having. They're still trying to get a high, you see, even though they're departed from the body. And it's a terrible thing. Because these individuals wander around attaching themselves, they go into gloomy, dark regions where souls like themselves are living an addicted life. And so they carry with them not only their own negative karma that they've accumulated, but they begin to influence the mind and the behavior of another to go even more so down that road. For somebody who's become very enmeshed into that world and their mind has become very weak, they become a vehicle for another who has a strong addiction in order to work out their own habits through that body. Isn't that an interesting thing? And so, in this case, it can be that somebody is mentally ill and that they wander the earth once again. Now, everybody is offered the light upon leaving this world, but some refuse it, or some are just in a very confused state and refuse to recognize it from that standpoint. And they don't even realize that they're in a death state, that their body has died. And they're acting out unconsciously on their own desire nature. Now, I have worked with some individuals who have been influenced in this way. And most often, by presenting the light to that departed soul who has attached themselves to that individual, they will choose the light when encouraged to do so because they have gone on for so long roaming this world trying to get their needs met in these negative, dark kinds of ways. And you can send these souls out and move them along on their way to help them in their own evolutionary path. It's a tremendously interesting thing, but it also teaches us a very deep lesson that to move into the realm of addictions and to become addicted ourselves not only impacts our lives and those who loved ones around us, but it also has far-reaching consequences. There are those who speak of the astral worlds as if it is some far distant place. But actually, your astral body is right here with you. It is the electrical emotional body that inhabits this physical body. And yet it's not strictly defined by the physical body because it extends out beyond this physical body. And your causal body is right here as well. You exist in all these realms. Now, if you are very intent upon some sensory experience and doing something in this world, you're fully in the physical body and operating in the physical body. This is where most people, when they wake up in the morning till they go to sleep at night, they operate in that body. But if you have refined your consciousness to some extent and you feel the refined electrical body, it's the life energy body, and you feel it as a tingling energy, and you feel yourself not strictly defined as the physical body, you are transferring your consciousness from the physical to the astral during those times when you have that sensitivity. And then if you are deep, deep in thought, and you're barely aware of the surroundings, the people can be speaking around you, there can be noise, but you're barely aware of it. You're barely aware of having a physical body at all, and you're not really in your energetic body or your astral body. You're in the causal realm. You're in deep in thought. And you are then in the causal realm. Even so, as you move from the causal into the more refined spiritual realm, and you feel the bliss, you feel the all-pervading peace, you feel an expansion of consciousness that goes out from you, that is no longer limited by your physical body, no longer limited by your electrical or energetic body, or even your causal body, or the realm of subtle ideas. You go beyond ideas. Your mind comes to a standstill, so to speak. And yet, you've never been more alive. You've never been more conscious before. You have now entered into the spiritual realm. You see, these are not distant places. They're right with you, always. In fact, your life is a manifestation of the spiritual, then through the causal or the ideal realm, and then into the electrical or the life energy realm, and then into the physical. And this is the way that all life is manifested. Now, where we have gotten confused is most of us live from the physical body, and it becomes the dictator, what we want in a particular moment, what we're afraid of. So desire and fear nature of the body begin to rule the roost. And it's not a very kind dictator. It always has needs and new needs and needs upon needs. In order to reverse this, we attune the consciousness to the divine consciousness, but it doesn't happen in a moment, does it? We sit down to meditate. We sit down to put our minds upon God, to let go of this physical body, but suddenly all kinds of thought and desire nature come up. And then, if we're successful in going beyond that, we then have daydreams and we enter into the astral or into the causal realm. And these kinds of experiences beckon to us and demand our attention. If we are successful at putting those aside, then we can enter into that pure, still state of divine consciousness. Now, in the beginning, we just get a taste of it now and then. Now and then. But if we really put our minds to it and go to work purifying this consciousness, this mind, so that the mind now is attuned constantly to the divine flow, now we're living in a state of Christ consciousness. Now, only one who's been established in the Christ consciousness should take on the evil karma, as Master says it here, of another. Because otherwise, if you have not mastered yourself, then taking on the experience of another will get you further into delusion. It's only a wealthy man who is able to help someone else out who is in need. Because the wealthy one has the resources in order to help pay the debt for another. So it doesn't make any sense for two people to drown instead of just one. But if there is one who is stronger, then it can help lift the other one up. Now, this means that we can all serve, but to the degree and capacity that we're capable of. There are those who are in the helping profession as counselors and therapists, and I've seen it on many occasions where those will get caught into an ego trap, and suddenly they become angry and vindictive with the very people that they set out to help because they feel powerless in it. You see, they've been consumed into the world of the one that they've been trying to help because they've been trying to do it out of ego. They've lost their spiritual and psychological base in order to be truly helpful to that one. And so in order to be really helpful, we have to keep our mind attuned to the divine consciousness. Now, if you find yourself in a position where you're trying to help another, and then suddenly you get pulled into their world and you lose identification with the divine consciousness, it's time to get out and to get reestablished into that divine consciousness. You have to do that before you can do any good. As Papa said, you need to be realized of God before you can do any good in this world. Why? Because if you're acting out of ego, you may have the very best of intentions. I would like to help you. But how do you know what to do? How do you know what is truly helpful for the individual? Sometimes it is good to be of help by stepping in and lending a hand. But as a sign that I had on my refrigerator used to say, some people need a helping hand and some people need a helping foot. So sometimes some people need a boot in the butt in order to get going. In order to get them, and then giving them a helping hand isn't helping them at all, because that's not what they need in the moment. And how can you judge from an ego standpoint? You can try, but you can't be certain as to what you're doing will be really helpful to that one. So here Jesus is upbraiding the consciousness of those who have come, calling them an evil generation. It reminds me of Shirdi Sai Baba. And devotees would come to Baba, and he is known for his great miracles that he would provide. So they would come with health problems, with financial problems, with any kind of problems at all, you name it. And they would come, and Baba would see them coming at a distance. And suddenly he would start yelling at them, "Get out of here, never come back." They would pronoun to him, "Oh, Baba, you must help me." He'd take rocks and he'd start throwing them at him. He'd boot them with his foot. He literally gave them a helping foot. Until he drove them away, and they went away confused. But also when they went away, they found that the physical illness they'd been dealing with, or the financial difficulties they were dealing with, would evaporate. They would be gone. And then they would come back in gratitude, and he would welcome them in. He would be so loving to them. And it was realized by some of them that who he was speaking to was not the individuality of the soul. For them, he had complete and total compassion. But who he was telling to get out and never come back was the illness, was the financial bad luck that they were having, that evil spirit that was hanging around them. Now, these evil spirits exist. They do in truth. And when you have developed your intuition, you will get hints, or you will see that. You will see somebody with an aura around them that looks like Pigpen from the comics, with this cloud hanging all around them. And sometimes the cloud is black, it's dark. Sometimes it's red and it's angry. It assumes various colors and forms and shapes. Sometimes you see it, sometimes you feel it. Sometimes you meet somebody and you want to take a shower afterwards because water neutralizes and helps to purify negative astral forces. That's why baptisms were developed, was to help wash away the sins or wash away the negativity, the darkness, the negativity that somebody else brings to you. And so you meet people like that and you just sense it, or somebody else that you meet and you feel better. You feel smarter. You feel uplifted. You get some spiritual hit from them that helps to lift you up. You see, we all are our brother's keepers in that way. Sometimes we think we have a negative mood and, oh, that's just about me. That doesn't affect anybody else. And we don't realize how our mood affects the people who are around us. And some people go about unconsciously indulging themselves in these moods. And they reason in themselves, well, that's just me. But it's not just you. It's everybody, and it affects everybody. Even as when you are in an uplifted mood, that also affects everybody in your life. And there are no exclusions to that. So we have to become ultimately responsible. I was speaking to a young man yesterday, and he's involved in some rock bands. And I said, "What kind of rock bands are you doing?" And he's been involved in some of these dark, heavy metal bands, the Black Sabbath, and some of these kinds of things. And it's a very sad thing when the consciousness is attracted to this. Now, I remember listening to some of these bands when I was young. And I didn't really give it too much thought what the words were, but the words and the lyrics were really quite negative. And I didn't go to see them in concert, but I would see representations of it later. And there were some very dark things that went on in the stage this way. Now, some people can hear this, and it's a little bit like water off of a duck. It just doesn't penetrate. But others get deeply influenced by it. And so whatever we project in the way of what we do, what we sing, what we put out to the world, we're responsible for. And it's not that everybody will be deeply affected by it, but it has its effect. And there are those who will be deeply affected by it. And we are responsible because it's part of what we have put out to this world. So we have to be cautious of this. Now some will say, but you're saying there's nothing I can do that's fun, that's joyful. Yes, joy is a part of your nature. We've just misidentified what real joy is all about. We think freedom comes from doing whatever I want to do, whatever I choose to do, and there's a certain sense of truth of that. But when we choose to do things that lead us deeper and deeper into entrapments of the ego mind, and into darkness and negativity, that's not freedom. No way. No way. That leads us further and further into imprisonment. And we've used or misused our freedom. And actually have thrown ourselves into a deep prison. And then we wonder, why did God do this to me? Why did He allow it to happen to me? I've heard adult children talk about their parents. Why were they so indulgent to me? Why did they let me get away with so much? As if it's the parents' fault alone. Now, parents have a responsibility, that's true. But it's just another way of diverting responsibility. And there are some people who will never take responsibility. One definition of evil are those who do not have the courage to grow psychologically and spiritually. And they are always putting off onto others what is rightfully their own. And you hear people speak along these lines. It's what everybody else does to them. It's how the world treats them. That's why they're such nasty characters. It's because what others have done to them, without ever taking responsibility for themselves. And they just leave a wake of chaos and destruction wherever they go, because they take no responsibility for themselves. The very first chapter in the Bhagavad Gita refers back to the blind king who is asking, how went the day? How went the day? It starts with reflection, self-reflection. An analysis of how your life is going, how your day is going. Are you staying on track, or are you getting called off into the deep end? Without that ability to reflect on yourself and to think on your life, you cannot grow. So it's a very, very important aspect of development, and something we can help our children to do is to reflect on their lives, to see the law of cause and effect. When you do this, here's what the effect is. When you do that, here's what the other effect is. And some will have positive and the other negative. And when individuals learn to do that, they now have the basis in order to grow and to become better as they go along. But as long as an individual avoids that kind of reflection, no way will they be able to continue to grow in any significant kind of a way. So Master continues, many are the torments that disembodied wicked spirits may experience in the after-death state, according to their store of evil accumulated in earth life. In this instance, Jesus recognized a malevolent spirit who is karmically deaf and dumb, who possessed an earthly body in order to regain auditory and vocal powers. However, so acting is the immutable law of cause and effect, so exacting is the immutable law of cause and effect, that the vocal cords and auditory nerves of the unlawfully possessed body, though otherwise healthy, were rendered useless. Owing to this boy's being possessed since childhood, his nervous system was completely exhausted. Thus, when the devilish spirit was cast out of him by Jesus, the child appeared as dead. But Jesus took him by the hand, charging him with cosmic energy as he lifted him up, and immediately the cured boy was fully restored. Now, why couldn't the disciples cast out the spirit? Jesus explained to his disciples, to cast out the evil spirit long lodged in the afflicted boy required steady faith. When you witness the frightfulness of his condition and fail to heal him by one or two attempts, you disbelieved. Your wavering faith was unable to draw sufficient power from the cosmic source of all accomplishment and healing. Through my Christ consciousness perception, I declare unto you that if the inner divine communion you have even the smallest seed as a grain of mustard of real intuitive conviction of God's power, any mountain of difficulty will be removed at your command. Master once described that he was asked for healing prayers for an individual who is in the hospital. And with his full attention upon the Christ Center, he settled himself into a deepened state of prayer. Now, somebody asked me the other day, how do you pray? And I said, you know, I don't really pray with words any longer. The prayer with words supposes a distance between the individual and the Godhead to whom they are praying. I said that when you lift your consciousness up and you feel yourself to be one with the all-pervasive Spirit of God, and somebody is on your mind, I said, there will go out automatically a divine virtue, an effulgence, that goes out and lifts that individual up. Now, Master did this in this case with the individual that he was focused on. And you see, it takes time to develop your nervous system and your consciousness to where you're able to fully be at one with this divine spirit. Otherwise, you feel overwhelmed by it. You feel that it is filling you up to overfilling, and you can't hold it all, so to speak, because it's your ego that's still in there that's trying to hold it all. So gradually, you dissolve the ego consciousness to where you can merge into that divine consciousness, and there's no longer a question of holding it all. But simply, it is a power that's flowing through you as a conduit, so to speak. That's a dualistic way of thinking about it, but nevertheless, it can be helpful to the mind to comprehend it in this way. And so your consciousness rises up, and you feel yourself in an at-one-ment state. In that divine consciousness, all thoughts become prayer, because you are now manifesting and living in that divine consciousness. So Master doing that with this individual in the hospital in mind, and such a power grew in him that he felt a mighty crack sound like thunder. And that the people in the hospital room with this man who was many thousands of miles away, at that same time heard a mighty crack like a thunder, only there is no storm, there is no lightning, there is nothing going on outside that would indicate such a sound, and they just heard it in that room itself. That was the power that manifested, and the man began healing from that moment forward. So these things are real, and they are things that we can accomplish once we have united our consciousness with the divine consciousness. And then you don't have to pray with words. It becomes a wordless prayer. It becomes a prayer of consciousness rather than the thing of duality. Now, you can try to visualize that for yourself, but until you have really entered into that divine consciousness, you can't know the full power or meaning of it. But as you enter into that divine consciousness and you feel your mind united with God, and then somebody comes into your mind, you will feel, as Jesus said once, that virtue went out from him. You will feel that power of God. You will feel that purity. You will feel that lightning thunder leave your being. And it will go out and it will have its effect. Now, there are those who go and undergo instantaneous healing. That's the only kind that the Catholic Church recognizes in terms of recognizing its saints. But there are also those that are in a longer-term pull. And it's a pull towards that individual, towards the divine. Now, every individual has free will. You do, I do, everybody does. And no one has a right to infringe upon somebody else's free will. But when you think on somebody and see them filled and know them to be filled with that divine light and consciousness, you help to strengthen that spirit and that idea within them. And you give them a clear choice where before maybe they felt snowed under by all the negativity and all the darkness. Now they have a glimmer of light. And they can choose, if they so will, to hang on to that light and to allow it to help draw them out of whatever condition they're in. They can also choose, if they do so, to have a pushing away. That's why Master here said it requires a repentant spirit. Because it requires the cooperation and free will of the individual being helped. Now, in Sri Yukteswar's case, he healed a man who was the veterinarian doctor, even though he had no faith in Sri Yukteswar. But apparently, he still had a willingness to be healed. But then he had no willingness to adopt the life that Sri Yukteswar recommended for him afterwards. And because of his lack of attunement and his lack of surrender, his illness came back to him and he dropped over dead one day. And so it still requires the individuality to become whole and to become healed. Now for this little soul, this little boy, to be inundated with this spirit would indicate that he came into this lifetime with a weakness towards the astral through his own indulgences, perhaps in a previous time. And so he had that weakness, and so that's still something that he would have to strictly avoid. In my speaking with people, I speak with many different people in my work. And some of them will say, I know that I've had dalliances with these negative dark forces in the past. I know I can't go there. I know that I can't indulge in that. Because if I do, I'll get caught up in that. And that's exactly right. That's exactly right. We can oftentimes sense it. And one of the hardest things to transcend in your going to God is this sense of power that you can get. Because as you get lifted up in consciousness, you feel that power flowing through you. And it's seductive. It calls to you. You think of yourself as being special. You think of yourself and what you can do for the good of the world. But as I said before in quoting Papa, you can do no good until you have God realization. Now, you can think that's God realization, being in that uplifted state, but it's not. Because your ego is still alive and well. It's still kicking. And you can't afford a lapse, not one. And so, as Master did after he came to America, when he first came, he sometimes got into performing miracles in order to help attract people. And at some point, he recognized that this was not what he should be doing. And so he asked the Divine Mother to take away all miracle-making power from him so that he would be free from that, you see. So we should not indulge in these things. If God chooses to perform something through you, become His instrument, become His empty vessel, and allow Him to do it. And then if He does something through you, and you see it, and you feel it, then instantly give all back to God. All acknowledgement, all recognition. Of myself, I am nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works. When we have this feeling, not only for the miraculous, but for the mundane, all the abilities that we have in this world, we feel have come from that divine consciousness. And as a result of that, we have this power that flows through us at times when God wills it, not when I will it, because of myself, how would I know what to do? But when God wills it, then it's perfect, it's beautiful, it's wonderful. We don't need to be afraid of it, but we give everything back to God. And so this becomes the realm of wordless prayer by uniting your mind to God's mind. And some people in the past, when they read about monism and the oneness with God, they resist even the notion of prayer. But prayer is still an active force, even when your mind is united with God's mind, because you are here to be a blessing to this world. And I urge you that whenever you hear of things that are negative in this world, we've heard much about the economic downturn. We hear much about politicians and the ways that they don't live up to their calling. And we can get discouraged. We can feel overwhelmed by it. We can feel that this world has entered down the wrong path. But instead of doing so, see that as a calling for your own prayer. And whether it is a prayer with words or a wordless prayer, send out a prayer for this world. Every time you hear of a negativity or a misdeed, send out a prayer to that individual. And if you think to yourself, well, that person killed somebody, or they robbed all of these people, I don't want to pray for that person. You don't pray for them to be successful in being criminals. You pray for them to be enlightened. You pray for them to be uplifted in consciousness. You pray for them to recognize and know what is truth and what is light and to be attracted to it. Of course, that's what you want for that individual. You want them to understand and to come into a state of realized consciousness. And once they've done that, no way could they steal from others. No way could they harm another, because they would realize that in stealing from somebody else or harming another, they are harming themselves and stealing from themselves. It makes no sense to you any longer to do so. And so you're not praying for their success in negativity and darkness. You're praying for light for them. And of course, we have all come through mixed backgrounds, haven't we? We're all mongrels, because we have the divine consciousness, but we also have human consciousness. So we're all mongrels. We've all come from mixed breeds and mixed backgrounds. And so don't hold out against anybody's enlightenment, but pray for, live for the world's enlightenment, and that we come into that state of peace that Papa talked about. It is not unattainable, but it does take souls dedicated to that idea. First, become peaceful. Then you may issue out spontaneously through your own peace a prayer of peace for this entire world, a wordless prayer that will help change the world and lift it into the divine consciousness. If you'll pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Bow to the light within you.